Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 205 of CJ Evolution. 205 episodes made possible by you, the listener and supporter. Patrick here, host and creator. Thank you for tuning in. If you're a new listener, welcome. If you've been listening for a while now, welcome back. And for those of you that are not in the criminal justice field, we welcome all of you and thank you for listening. Special thanks to all those first responders out there, brave men and women who work so hard every day protecting us day in and day out from the various threats that the nation faces. And thank you for your service. Very excited to be partnered with Four Sigmatic. I'm sure you know this by now, but I love their product. I love their mushroom coffee. And if you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. If you take that link over to their website, you're going to get 15% off using the promo code CJEVO. You know, folks, my social media presence is growing, and that is largely due to a great group of people that are part of Arctify. Arctify is an amazing company. They are a social media agency that can help you get to that next level. Dakota and his team, big shout out to all you guys and gals that are part of Arctify. If you want to see what they can do for you, head over to arctify.com. You will not be disappointed. You know, folks, I love all the guests that come on, but I really, really get excited when another law enforcement officer comes on. My next guest, you're going to love. She knew she wanted to be a police officer from the age of six, and she has some amazing experience as well as sound advice for those entering this great field we call law enforcement and criminal justice, as well as some good advice for those of us, me too, that have been doing it for a very long time. So enjoy the next guest. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have Carrie McNally on the show. She's a 28-year career veteran with the Seattle Police Department. Hello, Carrie, you there?
Hi, I am. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you for being on the show. I know we had some audio problems at the beginning, but I'm glad you're here. And I did a little bit of an intro with you, Carrie, but can you fill in the void and tell us who Carrie McNally is?
Well, as you mentioned, I'm a 28-year veteran with the Seattle Police Department. I knew when I was a kid that I was going to be following this career path, and having grown up in Washington, Seattle PD was the biggest agency here, and I felt that was the right fit for me. Mm-hmm. I went to the University of Washington until I was old enough to test. I tested when I was 21 and got hired a few months later, and I've had what I consider a blessed career, and yeah, I've done everything that I've wanted to do in this job, and I feel great that I now have a chance to hopefully leave the agency better than I found it back 28 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly been my goal.
Now, what drew you? I know you said from a very young age, at 6 years old, you wanted to be a police officer. Was there somebody in your life, a parent or some other person in your life that you were just fascinated with law enforcement? Was this something you just saw and you just at some point said, hey, I want to do that?
I like most kids, I think I probably wanted to be a ballerina and and everything else at some point too. But for me, it was I was drawn to it at a very young age, and I didn't have anybody in my family. I certainly had family that had been in the military. That was something I had considered. But I was naturally gravitated towards leadership roles and sports, and throughout, you know, all the leadership positions within school. And I just felt that I could do that job, and I wasn't dissuaded by the fact there weren't a lot of women in the job. I was fine with that. I'd always been very athletic and very strong and very competent, so I knew that I would succeed pretty young, and I was unwavered. This was my path. I also knew the standards. I made sure that I was prepared at 21 or 22, which many people are not at that age. Mm-hmm. That was important to me, that I came in with a level head and very mature and ready to take on the responsibilities that go along with law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know we talked a little bit off the air about some of the challenges in law enforcement. And you know, I know you probably, I hope not, but I'm assuming, even though I hate to assume, that you've faced some challenges as a woman in law enforcement. I think there needs to be more women in law enforcement, like we talked about off the air. Did you face any hurdles, you know, just, you know, as you rose up in your career in law enforcement?
You know, I think I did. I think that there were antiquated ideas. I recall When I first came on, I gravitated towards the more assertive units. So I was in units where we were handling a lot of gang and violent activities. And I ran into more, I had a few problems where people within that particular squad would say, well, women aren't supposed to be in this unit. But I was fortunate enough that the men that I was in the car with and was working with basically said, she's not in your car. It's not your problem. We want her here. And so I think as a woman coming into this, I had to learn what fighting words were. I had to learn that, women don't grow up fighting and saying combative things. And, you know, I had to learn that line of you're going to do it. You're going to do it right now. You got to learn where to pick your fights.
Yeah.
And, I think when I came on, there weren't many women. Oftentimes I'd be the only female officer working at night, for example. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I did get tired of having to do every search. I'd get called all over the
search. Can you send Carrie over here?
Yeah, exactly. I have to go to a whole new precinct to assist. But, I was also given opportunities that other people hadn't had. And I recall one incident. We had a big fight in it was like a Bite of Seattle event, huge crowds everywhere, and a big fight with a guy with a gun. And I jumped on the guy with the gun, and we get into a fight. And the next day I came back in, and the older officers basically said, well, we've been talking about you all day. And I said, why? They go, because we've never seen a female officer be the first person in the fight. And at first I thought, well, first that's kind of sad, but that hasn't happened. But it's also like, what would you expect me to have done? You know, I how could you stand around and not take action? I met with those kind of things, is defying, I guess, what the perceptions had been, which would be unfortunate as a female officer that was the kind of perception I was coming into, I suppose.
And what is the ratio now? And I imagine it's still predominantly men in like most agencies across the United States. What is it in Seattle?
In Seattle, we're about 15% of our department are women. Mm-hmm. Last year,
which is still a good improvement, right? That's a big number.
Improvement. And right now, my interim chief is a woman. My assistant chief is a woman. We have at least 4 to 5 women in ranks of captain and lieutenant. We're getting a lot better about that. Last year was our highest ever number of hiring women and persons of color for the year. So I think we're making strides. It's important to me that, you know, even though I never met a female officer before I got hired, and I don't know that it would have made a difference, I think there is value in having women talk to female officers who have had the department.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, I think with anybody, if you can relate to the person you're talking to and see yourself in their shoes, we're all much better off for that. Whether that be persons of color, whether that be women, I think that we do ourselves a disservice of not being a little more engaging at times. And so I think we're trying to fix that and make us more accessible. And I think it's paid off. Mm-hmm. Pretty good dividends, not only with our agency, but across the region here.
And I think we talked about, Carrie, a little bit off the air about the standards have to be the same.
Absolutely. And I think it's easier, for talking about women in particular, I think women, there's this principle called the lean-in principle where we'll look at a job and if there's 10 things listed, we want to exceed all 10 before we'll try it, which is not usually what men do. men are like, I got 2, I'm good, you know. They're willing to take that chance. And I think that it's about making sure people, whether they are men or women, completely understand what that standard is. And we raise them up to that standard so we don't have to lower the standard. I mean, I think that there's value in giving them all the information they need to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Now, talk a little bit about some of your career, your highest moments, and some of your proudest moments in your career. You've had a long, distinguished, honorable career. What are some of the proudest moments in your career, Carrie?
Honestly, a lot of them go with the activities that are often outside of the job. So in 2009, I think for me, in 2009, we lost 6 officers in a matter of 8 weeks here in Washington State. They were murdered. And in 2010, I went back to Police Week. And, you know, I thought, wow, you know, there's thousands of us. It doesn't matter what patch we wear or what uniform we have on. We all get it. We all kind of know why we do this job. Mm-hmm. We just aren't very good at telling the people closest to us, like our families, why we do it and why we're proud of what we do. And so in 2011, I started a program called Stand With Those Who Serve. And we're coming up on our 8th year, and it's a day for all public safety personnel. We also do it on a military base, but to come together for something positive. Mm-hmm. You know, I do a lot of line of duty death and respond to a lot of negative things in this job. And so my little piece of it is giving back to the families and the officers and giving them some peace for mm-hmm. one day, you know, even if it's one day. And I remember thinking, for me, that was a highlight. The first year I did that, looking at officers in uniform, carrying their kids, pushing strollers. You just don't see that. And so that was, I think, you know, one of those incidents that was important to me. And of course, we make impact on people's lives every day.
Of course.
You know, that feeling of, wow, that person's safe. We got them help. Tons of those throughout our career.
And you made a good point about, you know, we're really good at dealing with the public. We're really good at, you know, but sometimes we're not really good at taking care of ourselves.
Yes.
You know, and you know what I'm talking about. I mean, there's, you know, I think we need to get better as a profession. And I've talked about this before, and I know you have, Carrie, but we just need to take care of ourselves emotionally, physically. Dr. Kevin Gilmartin, I don't know if you've heard of him before.
I've recommended his books for years.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, it's just amazing. It's just an amazing guy. I've been trying to get him on my show for a while, but I mean, it's so important that we take care. It doesn't matter if you're male, female, in law enforcement, we need to take care of each other better.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that also goes to some of my highlights. You know, I taught the academy for 3 years. Mm-hmm. I was in our advanced training unit. So, you know, for me, any chance that I have to empower the people around me to mm-hmm. take care of each other, to make sure that we all know that our families are going to be taken care of. Mm-hmm. You know, I really do look at this. This has been my life. I wouldn't have done anything different. And so my colleagues are my family.
Yeah.
Anything I can do to help them succeed, get through, you know, troubled times or whatever that is, whether that be in training or leadership development or whatever that is, that's where my heart's at.
Mm-hmm. And you're very passionate. I know you are, which most people are in law enforcement. We're passionate about, I know I am too, leadership development. Why is it so important in law enforcement?
Well, you know, I think you have to have some leadership tendencies to even be drawn to this job to begin with. Mm-hmm. And of course, you have to have followers, too. People have to understand when it's time to follow and time to lead. But I think in my career, what I've seen is we put so much focus on pushing people to promote when we have people at all ranks that are the leaders. They're the ones that are people that naturally gravitate towards those people. And we don't give them a lot of skills.
Yeah.
You know, I had the great opportunity. I used to run conferences as a side job for police chiefs and fire chiefs in U.S. and Canada. So, you know, I was inspired by, you know, the speakers that I would bring in from all over the world, that their lessons on leadership. Yeah. And I would watch officers that, you know, I'd be planning these events. And I'd see the officer sitting in the back thinking like, wow, these people are amazing. And I never get to hear them.
Yeah.
It's only for the top ranks. We don't offer those kinds of opportunities to people at all ranks. That's been my goal over the last few years, is whether you're a detective or a patrol officer, we're all natural leaders, but sometimes we're not given those opportunities to be project managers. Mm-hmm. We're not given those opportunities to come up with a new innovative thing that would help the agency. We tend to stifle people, I think, a little bit too much when they have creative and great ideas, but they need to know how to bring them forward.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I've embraced that kind of position over the last, especially the last few years.
And I'm a big proponent of, I don't know if you've ever read the book by Robin Sharma called The Leader That Had No Title. And some of the best leaders I've ever worked with don't have any rank.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you need to be a commander or a lieutenant or a captain or a chief. Yeah, those people are leaders, but you don't have to have title to be a leader.
No,
and that's what I tell my officers. That, you know, you can be the example. You don't have to. You can be that informal leader. You know what I mean? That change agent within the organization. You don't have to have stripes or bars or stars on your uniform to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, one of the probably the most exciting opportunities I had is several years ago. I had a deputy chief who texted me. I've been friends with him for a long time, and he said, "You can say no, but I'd like you to be my aide."
Mm-hmm.
And said, well, I'm a detective. First, I have no rank. The captains are not going to be very happy about this. And he said, you know what? I'm picking the person who has the skill set that
exactly.
I want. I don't care about your rank.
Mm-hmm.
And it took about 6 months for people to get kind of over that. But then they realized that they put the right person in the right job. Mm-hmm. And I took that very seriously. And, you know, I had no rank. I've never chosen to go for rank, but I've been given so much ability over the years because, you know, I also bring along the right people. So, yeah. You know, I know who to reach out to and say, you know, I've been given this task, but I'd really like you to be on board with this. And, you know, how can we work together?
Well, and your higher ups were very keen to, they saw you and they say, she's got potential. She's got talent. So we need to put her in the right position. Right.
I'd like to believe I've done pretty well in my career. So, you know, I'd like to say it paid off. And
of course it did.
You know, I worked for the deputy chief, and then I became the interim chief's aide. I went back to the deputy chief and then another deputy chief. So they kept me around for a while. So I must have been doing something right, at least for a few years.
Now, I know if you go to, for everybody who's listening out there, if you go to the Seattle Police Department's webpage, which I hope all of you do, you'll see Carrie along with another detective who is in charge of recruiting right now. Right, Carrie?
That's correct. And he's been there for 14 years. So I'm new to the recruiting world, about 2.5 years. And I can't think of a better position that I absolutely love what I do.
Well, you are in such a critical role. I think that people that recruit, the officers, the men and women who recruit, as well as the FTOs are, I mean, everybody's in a critical role, but, you know, you guys are the gatekeepers, right? I mean, you're the gatekeepers. You are so instrumental in getting the right people into or recruiting the right people for the job.
I believe so. And, you know, I think that we've also taken the approach where everybody is a recruiter in the agency.
True.
You know, we know that statistically, you know, as many people hear about the job from another officer as they do our website or any mm-hmm. advertising method that we have. We've invited those officers to come along. So I have about 50 or 60 different officers who have reached out and said, how can I help with recruiting? I either grew up in this area or this is a community group that I really want to work with. And so we've brought them along with us. So while we have two full-time recruiters, I have a cadre of 50 different officers who really want to help.
That's awesome.
And that's made a huge difference connecting with different communities, with you know, people that they encounter every day, at whether it be the coffee shop or on a call or, you know, the grocery clerk that you go to that particular store. And giving them the power to do that, I think, has really been a critical piece of what I consider our success.
As you see any challenges in recruiting, because I think all agencies across the nation are having a little bit, well, I guess it depends on where you're at, but I know we've faced some challenges, my department, in recruiting. Do you see any recruiting challenges in Seattle?
Oh, absolutely. And it really is. Everybody is competing for the same candidates.
And so exactly.
Every job fair I go to, and I run quite a few of them too. You know, I do job fairs where there's 35 to 50 different law enforcement agencies alone that are looking for mm-hmm. candidates. So we're often stealing. It's like, if you're in the testing, let me go faster than them. And so I think that there's that, you know, my agency, you know, we have a national incident that is kind of across the board where we have a civilian oversight person that is recommending 2 days off for an officer who failed to de-escalate mm-hmm. a situation. And so, you know, when you get pressed like that across the country, it's really hard to convince people that, you know, this is the right fit for them. Mm-hmm. We also just are seeing the numbers declining. The economy is great. Everybody is hiring right now. So, you know, we just aren't seeing the numbers turning out that we have in previous years. So I think everybody's challenged with that. On top of, when you work in a diverse community, the questions are always going to be is, are there people that look like me that you have on your department? And so it's never just showing up at a recruiting event. It's targeted recruiting. It's making sure that we are in the right community groups that feel like they have been underrepresented in law enforcement. And how do we build that trust first? And then convince, you know, and then share with them the job opportunities.
That's a great point. I mean, everybody, you know, when you go to these events, people want to, like you said, Carrie, they want to feel like they're representative, you know, within the department. So that's a great point. But it's just a matter of getting those people to come onto the force and getting the right people. And like you said, it's tough. And I think a lot of that is, you know, there's been a lot of high profile cases over the years, which, you know, might have scared people away from the profession. But I do believe that, you know, it'll get better. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I hope so. It'll get better in the future.
I hope so. And, you know, I think we talked offline a little bit too about, you know, I think that agencies are really short-sighted in thinking that they just show up at events where it's 21 and 22 year olds and up, or career fairs. You know, if we really don't start planting these seeds early, there's plenty of people like me that knew when they were a kid. I encounter them all the time where they say, my kid, my child. And I'm like, you know what? Believe them. It's possible. Mm-hmm. But all it takes is a bad experience, a bad contact, and they're completely off of that potential. Mm-hmm. You know, schools, career days, things like that. You know, I think we've taken so much away from our community policing or our school resource team sometimes that we forget that this is the future. If we don't talk to these kids about this is a trade, this is a good career to have, we're absent at the career fair days. They don't have police or fire, at least in my area, at those career fairs. And yet we get paid, you know, we start at $70,000 once you graduate from the academy, and wow, you know, we're at $100,000 in 5 years. You're not going to find that in an accounting firm. You're not going to find that in another firm. And so people, I think, have misunderstood that this is a profession. It's a very good profession with great pay, great benefits, the camaraderie. It's something different every day. And, you know, I think we've just missed the boat on selling this as a legitimate career. I think people just assume it's some kind of, you know, low paying, you know, job. At least for us, the Northwest, we get paid incredibly well up here for police services.
Well, and I think a lot of it, like I said, and you know, it's some of the, you know, cases that have happened in recent years, and that might scare people away. You know, that, you know, the reality is, you know, Carrie, I'm preaching to the choir. I mean, most officers will never, you know, get into a deadly force encounter within their career statistically. So I think that's part of it. You know, the media, you know, kind of painting this picture in some cases of law enforcement. And I think that kind of adds to the problem of recruiting sometimes.
It absolutely does. And, you know, I challenge, and I've been on long enough where, you know, I have people that challenge me, why don't we have more, you know, officers of color in your agency? Mm-hmm. And I say, well, what are you doing for it?
Exactly. What are you doing to help?
Yeah. If you're bashing our agency constantly and you're leading the charge against us, how do you feel that people in your community are going to want to join us and keep making us better?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's our responsibility too, to become accessible.
I agree.
Diversity and inclusion. And I'm willing to have those difficult conversations and change people's perceptions.
Yeah. And I've had those conversations too. And you're exactly right. It starts with education. I mean, a lot of people get what they know about law enforcement from the movies, television shows, and that's not it. That's far from reality in most cases.
Well, and I've heard this too, is being able to, you know, I get to go to community events and talk to them about the, you know, things like the Beds for Kids projects, where we just gave away 600 beds for kids. The programs that we're doing, sports with all the kids in our community, and the demographic advisory councils. I mean, there's so many ways that we're connecting with our community that are just not advertised very well, and people don't know about them. Mm-hmm. And so it's great to be able to come in, because I've made myself knowledgeable about those programs, that I get to go share those, and people are shocked and surprised because you don't see it on the news. They're too busy talking about, you know, what the officer did in some place that has, you know, no proximity to us. And you know, they're painting 800,000 law enforcement officers with the same paintbrush.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, well, you know, that, I mean, they're, you know, the bad news sells, the good news doesn't. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, what other challenges? We talked about some challenges. What other challenges do you think that law enforcement faces, you know, in the future?
Again, I think it's a pipeline issue. I think that, you know, we've got schools, and I can only speak to my area. You know, we've got schools where we have teachers that are encouraging kids to walk out of school and to join up on causes, and they don't really even know what that cause is for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my city in particular, we have a lot of demonstrations. We have a lot of people that want to assert their rights, and that's fine. But I think that rhetoric is taking over people's perceptions. And so they're getting second and third hand information without seeking that knowledge themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's damaging to all of us. I think that we aren't always our best friend either. And it goes back to even promoting the things that we're doing. You don't see the good stories. There's day and day after day of great stories of what law enforcement are doing, but the agencies don't share them. And they're not putting them out, and they're not even doing internal, you know, commendations for officers. You know, there are just ways that we could be doing such a better job, but instead that rhetoric takes over and you shrink away from it.
Well, and a lot of it's political, and a lot of it's, you know, that, you know, and it's kind of pandering to certain groups. And, you know, I mean, you just gotta, I think it's going to get better, and maybe I'm just naive, but I think in the future, the pendulum is going to swing to the other side, and it's going to get better for law enforcement. I think it's getting better right now.
I certainly hope so. I mean, that's certainly my wish. I mean, I would hate to leave this career, you know, at a time where, you know, it's a low point, but, you know, and you've been on a long time too, that I laugh when people say, well, this is the worst it's ever been. I'm like, well, I don't remember the high time, you know, in 28 years, I don't remember the high time. Oh my God, we love the police. We love them so much, you know? So I'm like, you know, this too, you know, if you're wrapped up, if your life is so consumed by what the media says about you, then you probably picked the wrong profession.
No, and I always think, and I mean, Carrie, I don't know if you think this way. I mean, I think, you know, that the majority of people out there support law enforcement.
Absolutely.
I mean, I just believe that in my heart. I think it's the, you know, the people who get a mic in front of them that are going to complain, and those people are always going to be there, and they have the right to do that. But I think the majority of people out there truly do support law enforcement, and they love what we're doing, and they support us.
Absolutely. And, you know, I spend so much time at community events where, you know, even parades, and I laugh, you know, I'm in the parade waving, and there's so much love coming my way, and there's officers standing right behind them, leaning against the wall with their arms crossed. And I'm thinking, like, I bet they're not saying anything to that guy, you know? I mean,
I mean, it's so important. We need to realize what we're doing is what image we're projecting sometimes in law enforcement. Look, I get it. We're human. We have bad days.
Yeah.
But we have to be more cognizant of the image we're projecting. If we have this image like I don't care, then that's going to come off to the community members.
Absolutely. And not everybody has to do like me where, you know, I'm in pictures all day long and smile. I love being able to do that. But I also bring those officers, like I talked about with the recruiting sport team, to those events where they get to hear all day long why people appreciate and like them. Mm-hmm. And that to me is awesome because that's not their world in patrol most of the time. So it's bringing people into my world for a little while and saying, I promise you guys, there are people that just think the world of you and they support you, and they're going to say thank you all day long, I promise you. And that's what happens. And I get that opportunity and try to pass that along to other people that maybe are not seeing that all the time.
Yeah. Well, Carrie McNally, and I didn't mention this before, but thank you so much for your honorable service of 28 years as a law enforcement officer. We're very, very proud of you. Keep up the fantastic work. Is there any other things you would like to add before we wrap up?
Not at all. You know, I thank you for sharing the website information. And I believe sincerely that if you want a law enforcement career, whether it's mine or anyone else, I'm willing to help anybody. This is a profession. I would never have done anything different. I would help anybody find the place that fits them. However I can help, that's my passion.
Now, what are your plans for after law enforcement? You've been doing this for a long time. Maybe it's a little premature to ask, but I sense you have a book in you, Carrie.
I don't know about a book, but I'm very passionate about, teaching. I always have dreams of teaching for the UN or teaching women, you know, empowerment, things like that. But I actually do security consulting on the side, too.
Okay.
So I work for a pretty large company, and I, workplace violence, active shooter, incident command. I don't sit still very well, so I have the jack of all trades and master of none, I think, at this point. But I can see leading my own team somewhere. I do executive protection or anything else too. So, you know, I'm not sure. We'll see.
Well, I can see what
that's going to be.
Well, I can tell you're a natural leader, and much success to you in the future. If people want to reach out to you, Carrie, how can they do that?
I'm on LinkedIn, Carrie McNally. I'm pretty open with connections. I'm happy to assist people however is necessary. My contact for work, if they're interested in finding out more about the Seattle Police Department, as you mentioned, my website is seattlepolicejobs.com. My information and contact is there. I'm happy to answer any questions about careers with our agency. LinkedIn and my agency are probably the two best ways to reach me.
Well, Carrie McNally, thank you so much, ma'am, for being on the show, and much success to you in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.